power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
It does sound fun.
Six, five, four, I want to play this game so bad. One. Deadline.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Episode 27 of the new improved Diplomacy Cast, the one with more wine that we actually do.
Yeah, that's the exciting part about it. I think we bribed ourselves to do this.
Yeah, we did.
Which is nice.
And also, we had a tournament in between last episode and this episode.
Did we?
Yeah.
I think I had a tournament.
Well,
I'm kidding.
We attended a tournament.
I'm kidding.
You are, in fact, listening to Diplomacy Cast. Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy. Today, we really just want to talk about WAC.
Well, to a certain extent.
But we'll throw in some content for y'all who are actually listening to this to try and get better at Diplomacy, which is maybe something I should do after.
And I have a little anecdote to share, so that'd be good.
After WAC.
Yeah.
So we're giving you guys what you want. We're going to have some content, a Power Play segment. We're going to talk about the Russia-Turkey alliance, the juggernaut.
Yep. And we were going to have the winner of WAC on here, but he's too good for the podcast. So.
Yeah. A little too special.
Mm-hmm.
So. A little too precious. Probably not even this.
We'll tell you all about it.
After this. Oh, wait. We have an email. You guys have been bad about using it, and honestly, I can't blame you.
Oh, yeah.
For a while, we ignored your emails, but truth, we looked today. We were very disappointed. We got, like, an email between the last episode and this episode.
And this one we can actually check.
Yeah.
It's different than the last one.
Yeah, we have all kinds of technology. That email is diplomacycast@gmail.com. Give us topics to discuss. We'll do it, like in the old days, back when we were young.
Yeah, and, you know, put us in your circles on the Google Pluses.
Sure.
That's important.
Sure, yeah, to some reason. Do that thing. Oh, also, Facebook.com/diplomacycast. There's something there, too. Get on all that. All right, after this, The Circuit. Well, I hope you're all enjoying how awesome my voice sounds today.
I'm a fan.
I'm recovering. I'm sure it's going to be great after like an hour or so of this. So
you've developed that Casey Kasem growl.
This is American Top 40.
Right. It's good. So WAC.
Yeah, that happened.
It happened so good.
We are here to report that there was a successful last tournament in Seattle.
We did,
in fact, burn down the building.
Oh, my God. It's just a crater now.
Yeah. That was an excellent move on our part, I think.
I think we can both just sort of go back and forth. I kind of want to just go through the weekend and just...
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Yeah.
For me, things kind of started on Wednesday. And we had some, you know, Australians come in.
I was there.
I know you were there, I was going to say. Because, you know.
Yeah, the country breakdown of foreign travelers. Two Australians. A Frenchman.
French and an English.
An Englishman. A Dutchman.
A flying Dutchman.
A flying Dutchman who, you know, flew here.
Flew here.
And all of that.
And there were some Canadians, of course.
Yeah.
North America doesn't count.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's pretty good. We had a board, essentially, almost a board. Well, I guess that's only five, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's not quite a board.
I feel like we're forgetting somebody.
So do I.
But that was amazing.
It was really good. It was a great turnout.
And, yeah.
Turnout.
A turnout.
It's a tournament with a good turnout.
A turnout.
Yeah. It's good. So we had them in.
Mm-hmm.
Had some drinks. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. You know, you might be thinking of Roland, who lives in Texas, but he sounds so quaintly English.
Yeah. Or Andy Hull, who lives in LA and sounds so quaintly English. Or Chris Brand, who lives in Vancouver, BC and sounds so quaintly English. Is there something wrong with England, you guys?
Exactly.
The hobby had more English people who live here than English people, at least based on this. Anyway.
Without getting too much into it, we were out too late and we had some fine camaraderie. We welcomed the big travelers in. These were all people that had gone greater distances and wanted to spend a little more time around Seattle.
Yeah, then made a thing of it.
It was good.
It
was the right thing to do. It was fantastic, and Eric and I were great hosts, as always.
Right. I answered my first of what turned out to be about 400 questions from different people about, like, so what's this 12th man thing, then, that you all have going on?
No, yeah, it's going on. Yeah, so they're like, so, wait, soccer? No, it's actually football. No,
so there's 11 men on a side when you get on the pitch, you see, and then the fans, they cheer, and, well...
Anyway.
Yeah, they don't know.
So, Thursday rolled around, normal day during the day, people started coming in. I spent a lot of time sort of navigating that, getting people together, because Thursday, as we mentioned in the last podcast, that was going to be the big roast.
Yeah.
And I have to say, everything went off really quite well. I pre-funked pretty well. Mm. I started at 3, so, you know, I gathered people up starting at 3 o'clock, and we sort of had a pub crawl down to the venue.
Yeah. Which I miss because, you know, work, whatever.
Work. Mm-hmm. That's where your dedication just isn't as high.
It's probably the entire day off. Yeah, I took half the day off. I did.
And then we had people get there at 6, so I spent 3 hours getting primed for the main event.
I don't even know if roast does it justice.
Yeah, roast is not really.
It was like a deed without a name.
We had this Elvis impersonator there. We had this. The grotto at the rendezvous, and so it was a dedicated bar, and
there really was an Elvis impersonator.
Hilarious Elvis impersonator.
I'm just going to take a little
bit of time here.
Who brought his dad. First of all, his dad in it, like, I want to say, like a Huskies cap, sitting there, like, just doing his thing.
Just
him on. Brought his dad. Also, I'm going to say toward the end of the night, it broke down. He was starting to do some covers and not just Elvis anymore.
Yeah.
Really should have been a Chuck Berry impersonator. I felt he was a very adequate Elvis impersonator. He did one Chuck Berry song. It was outstanding. I don't know. Maybe there's not a market for that, but he had like a costume change in between, which was great. He like started as black leather Elvis and came back out as like white. I don't know, leisure suit Elvis or something. Yeah. Like, he had the works. Yeah.
So we had the set broken up. So he did like 5-6 songs. We did our roast.
Check the calendar, guys. This is not an April Fool's show.
Yeah,
this
was Elvis. Yeah. Check the calendar. April Fool's, I mean, I don't even know how long it is. It can't be like, I don't know, maybe only 5 weeks. We might not even do one this year. It's kind of...
No.
Yeah,
no,
it's
probably... We haven't before, so I don't know why we'd start now.
Some people were asking about it.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. I opened things up. I did an okay job because I didn't prepare anything. Eric got up there. He had written extensive notes, very well delivered. Some other people did some... had some fun things to say. It was open.
Close your eyes. Anyone who's listening to this and has like ever been to a diplomacy tournament but was not at this particular thing, and imagine, okay, you've watched a roast, right?
Yeah.
And or if you haven't, you know, the idea is you get up on the stage and you make a little speech and you make fun of everybody else in the audience, right?
Usually you have someone you're honoring. In this case,
honoring somebody. We're kind of honoring Whack.
Yes.
I made a point to really honor Nathan and Mark. Other people had other strategies, but you take shots at everyone in the crowd or anyone you feel like in the crowd. Now just close your eyes and imagine your average tournament diplomacy player and like, what an opportunity this is in their minds. What a moment. Wait a minute. You mean I get to get up there and demonstrate my charm and wit to everyone? They all have to listen. I make fun of everybody who's here. I get to tell whatever stories I mean, they brought it.
Yeah, it was good.
We all brought it. Like, I was getting a little worried, like, the night before. Like, I was like, did you write a speech? Did you write a speech? And I was like, nah, I didn't really write a speech. And I was like, oh, shit, am I the only one that did this? Am I going
to... Yeah.
Oh, boy. But by the time I got there, I realized, oh, no. Everybody brought it. Everybody came.
Yeah, there wasn't anything particularly weak at all. There was, like, everybody who got up there was like... Yeah, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, not everybody got up, so...
No, sure.
But it was... We filled, like, I would say close to an hour, 45 minutes to an hour of people just talking.
It felt like 5 hours. I don't know.
I think it's about an hour.
Yeah.
And then Elvis got back up on stage. That was fantastic. And then, because it's us, we finished that, we wrapped that up at 10, and then we went karaoke. So that was pretty good.
I kind of remember that.
We went to Hula Hula because Brian Sheldon really wanted to do some that.
Yeah, I do kind of remember that. I kind of remember I sang.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the tournament started.
Yeah, exactly.
So we went to bed.
Friday. No, it didn't start. No, you took people on a tour.
Right, that was right. Great. It hadn't even started yet. I forgot. Yeah, I did that thing. My one, like, thing that I really wanted to do was just take a troop of hungover, like, tournament goers, march them, you know, like Communist China style, march them down several blocks to go and on this underground Seattle tour thing that you can do. And turnout was about twice what anyone said it was going to be. Like, all these people at the last minute were like, oh, wait, you're going to that thing? Okay, I'll go to that thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Next thing I knew, I had like, I want to say like 16, 17 people that wanted
like
to go to
people.
This thing.
It's close to
20, yeah, and including poor Yang Klue, who somehow missed the group and like came like hauling ass down the street and made it in at the last second. And we went on the Underground Seattle tour, and it, you know, it's like the one fun tourist attraction that Seattle has, and everybody seemed to love it. It was like pretty history heavy, and people were able to nerd out. All the Europeans and even the Australians were like, God, everything's so new here. This is so cool. Like, just seeing, like, wow, all 100 years of your history.
It's amazing.
Well, but I think they weren't making fun of us. I think they really loved, like, oh, that's how Seattle comes to be. Like, it was nothing 120 years ago, and now it's the same. Like, people, you know, a bunch of people were like, that was really interesting. And so anyway, people seem to have a real blast at that. The hangovers or no hangovers. They really enjoyed the tour.
And then we got started around 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were in this crystal ballroom that you might be able to, there's pictures on, if you look up the WAC 2015 Facebook, you can see some pictures.
Oh, okay, good. I have some Elvis videos to add to that.
Oh,
just
you should.
So people believe me.
Yeah. Oh, we were looking for those. People would look really like
Oh, good. All right. I got some Elvis. I'll hook you up.
And that was delayed a little bit for something we're going to talk about after this.
Yeah.
But we got together as we were hinting. We actually made this happen. Eric has got the names down. Mm-hmm. We've got the seeds. Mm-hmm. We've got the teams.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like a little fantasy diplomacy is going to be happening this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's really exciting. We're going to talk a little bit more about
that. I don't actually have standings to report today because I haven't gotten all that stuff, like all the scored stuff from the Grand Prix standings back yet.
Yeah.
But it's, I think y'all know that are listening for that information. Y'all know kind of how you did at this thing.
There's only been one tournament, so.
We'll get there.
Yeah,
do you want to go there now?
No, we'll get there.
Okay.
So we opened up. We had, I want to say, 8 boards.
Yeah, and massive.
And it was great.
Huge-mongous.
People had a fantastic time.
I don't
really know. We had the bar there for the whole evening.
Yeah.
You know, you could just go walk up to him. And
Mark started buying expensive wine.
Because it's Mark.
Because he's Mark, bless his heart. It was very thoughtful of him. We never did interview him before the final WAC, and now he died in the fire. So so I guess he never will be on the show.
He might not have been real.
Yeah.
So there's that.
It might have just been that we've been stealing money for years from our workplaces, and we had to come up with the excuse. Oh,
stuffing it into a scarecrow. We call Mark Zoppel. sorry, guys. I didn't mean to ruin that for you right on here in the podcast, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was just like a guy stuffed with money that we'd embezzled from our workplaces. Yeah. You actually believe his last name was Zoffel?
Hey,
come on. Exactly, Zoffel. Anyway, I'm not going to talk too much about like what happened each in particular round. For one thing, I didn't play a single round, so...
Yeah, and I didn't either. I mean, I did, but may as well not have. It was a series of crushing disappointments and heartbreak that made me like doubt my entire like ability to play diplomacy for like an entire weekend. But, you know, whatever.
It's a weekend!
What are you going to do?
Yeah, no.
As long as they're listening to the show.
That's what I had to cling to.
Yeah.
It's because of the show that I'm just really getting targeted.
Yeah. No, that's not what I'm claiming. I'm just saying that, like, as long as you guys can keep killing me, as long as you listen to the show afterwards, that's all I'm saying. Yeah.
And so people did that to Eric a lot.
Mm.
And there were no problems.
Mm-mm.
with how things were put together, how things were seeded. Last round, we decided to have a little bit of fun. We enlisted the help of Dave Maletsky to seed most of the boards, mostly because he's really good at being maniacal. Not all of them. We had a top board, so he didn't seed that.
He thinks he's funny, that Dave.
And, you know, at that point,
pretty funny.
Matt Shields, who had done a Herculean job of wrangling people and doing his tournament director stuff, we were just exhausted. And so said, you know what, let's have a little bit of fun. Let's do this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
And as we were, you know, putting up the bales of hay and dousing them with gasoline as things wound down.
Oh, boy.
You know.
What else to report? I don't even know. Like, I feel like...
Dan Lester won.
That's a thing.
Which was good.
He won the North American Championship.
Yeah, because it was Dave Collin as well.
Guy. Yeah, so way to go, everyone.
I know.
Congratulations to North America once again.
Who is, yeah, once again, crowning
the top board, I guess, well, yeah, did not contain me.
Not even a little.
There was a ton of solos, we should mention. Ton of solos.
Yeah, it was
I think pretty
cool.
Much almost everyone on the top board had a solo.
Yeah, there were like five.
To get there. Yeah, five or six, something like that. Yeah,
it was. One best country was, there were, someone soloed as Russia, then someone else soloed as Russia. They got the best country because they soloed with 19 or 20.
Can I tell you something that happened to me once at a tournament? I soloed as Russia. I came in third for best Russia because I had soloed with a mere 18. The guy who had like 19 or 20 was pissed because somebody else had 21.
Yeah. There was something else. There was another really, there was a close squeaker on a best country or 6th or 7th place that it came down to one center.
Yeah.
So if somebody had quit a little bit early, and if they had gone another year, got another center, they would have.
Right, right.
But you know, that's
what I didn't finish in second place.
I know. I'm so glad that streak of yours is gone.
Yeah. And I much prefer 57th place or whatever it must have been. I don't know. I had one very fun game that I totally boned at the very last round of the tournament when it didn't matter anymore.
Yes, I remember this. You're doing well, and then you're...
And then I just did a bad stab, and Brian Sheldon benefited, and friend of the show, and traveler from all the way in Holland, Bernard, who had traveled here mostly to do that, then got stabbed by me for no reason and ended up basically just boning both of our games. So, yeah, there's your reward for being a loyal listener, Bernard. You're very welcome. No, it was not a pretty scene. It was... Somehow I got talked into it, and Brian Sheldon was somehow the beneficiary of it, and I was a sad clown.
Well, Bernard, I sincerely, if you're listening, I'm sorry about Eric.
I'm sorry about me too. I had a game the night before. I like got jumped, actually did my like old timey thing where I was clawing back out of it, and then right at the like critical moment where I was like out of the pain, I misordered.
Man, you had a weekend.
Yeah. Oh, you don't even know. Like the first game, like I didn't even have a chance. The second game, I forget what I did. Like, it was just bad. I don't know. It really legitimately, I was like, God, has this game like passed me by somehow in the last couple of years? Like, did I just forget how to play? Which, I don't know. I'm going to go to Worlds. I'm going to try at Worlds.
Yeah. I haven't decided yet.
Yeah.
I'm on the fence. I'm on the fence, I got to say.
It's Memorial Day weekend, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, DixieCon.
North Carolina.
I'm 90% to go. Yeah.
If you can, definitely go. Oh, that sounds like just a bag of bones falling to the ground.
Oh, yeah. Joining us now, our special guest, one of Nathan's cats. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It's not cool at all.
It's super cool.
Anyway, it was a good run.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't think of a better way to really close that one out. It was fantastic.
Let me just say, Nathan, Mark, Matt did such a ridiculously good job and got a ton of well-deserved praise and all kinds of speeches, starting at the roast and going like all weekend long. People just were like spontaneously getting up and like misty-eyed making speeches, like honoring Nathan and Mark. I mean, it's clear to me that this was at least about half the hobby's very favorite tournament of the year, and they came every year, and it meant a lot to a lot of people, and we're sorry to see it go, but these guys, I mean, they outdid themselves. Nathan won't say it, so I will. Like, they outdid themselves, like, again, and having outdone themselves and having outdone everybody else in North American diplomacy a couple of times before, they did it again, and it's a bummer to see it go. It ended on a bit of a note when Jake Mannix, who had attended our tournament, did make an announcement that maybe coming soon, maybe coming within the next year or so, there'll be some new thing in Seattle diplomacy. We'll see. He sounded serious about it at the time. He may well be serious about it. He's been lost to us for a while. He's been in this hobby for a long time. He and I kind of came into it together, and now he's thinking it's time to kind of get back into it and maybe try and do some tournament hosting stuff. So, Seattle, do not despair.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, it's one testament to a really good event. At least four different parties made a lot of saber-rattling about how they were going to do their tournament again this year. All West Coast folks. So
yeah.
A Vancouver, a San Francisco, a Portland, a Seattle. They're all like, "Oh, we're going to make this happen."
Mm-hmm.
So if nothing else, maybe we'll get something out of that.
Yeah,
so,
you never know. I mean, usually people say they're going to do five times as much as what they do, but even if that's the case, mathematically, maybe we'll get one West Coast tournament next year, which would be one more than I was really expecting. So that'd be great. And hey, maybe we got five. You never know.
I know that's not going to happen.
Yeah, we'd have to bring back the swaggle that happened.
Holy crap. Well, it was nice to close. We'll close the book on that.
Yeah, and, one little swaggle reference at the end to kind of like wind the whole thing down.
Just like, you know,
I feel like there's so much more to say.
Whack.
Yeah. Hashtag swaggle.
Hashtag swaggle.
I'm going to go tweet right now.
All right, so
fantasy diplomacy.
Yeah, exactly.
We can't wrap this up without a conversation about
fantasy diplomacy.
You know, the thing.
It delayed the whole event by almost an hour, so I think we should definitely...
It took us 15 minutes to do that draft. Now you're just whining. 20 minutes. Tops. For those of you who didn't listen to last episode, go listen to last episode because it's awesome. For those of you who did, you already know what we're talking about. But so we decided to break the hobby
a little bit,
just for comedy's sake, just to, you know,
get it out of our systems.
Like we do.
So, you know, Eric did all the work for it. And,
yeah.
I just provided space for him to do it. We got some great teams put together. We did that snake draft we talked about last week,
mm-hmm.
and. The really
16 teams, I think. I'm pulling it up right now.
Yeah. Some really interesting teams, the strategies that started coming up. Like, it was so interesting to watch people, strategize during the team picks. And then, and this was the best part, during the event, the number of references I heard people saying, "Oh, well, that person's on my fantasy diplomacy team. I can't do that." Or, "I want them to win because they're on my fantasy." It was.
You guys amazing. Have no idea. I mean, we knew that we were going to just break the hobby doing this. I said this several times. Like, we knew that this thing was going to break the hobby, like, for comedy
purposes,
gold effect. I had no idea they'd be this efficient about it.
I know, just
like, seriously. Just leaping up. Like, to one board in, they were already considering the implications to their fantasy teams of every possible thing. There was lingering sanctimony after the tournament that maybe the top board went in some particular way because of different people's fantasy diplomacy teams. There's a guy with a disputed team that maybe actually exists and maybe doesn't actually exist. So I'll get to that really fast. There's Dave Maletsky, who drafted himself and is now completely like planning on going to every single tournament that he can possibly go to this year just so he can win this. And I made it perfectly clear to Dave that the prize for winning this year's Fantasy Diplomacy Cast is you get a shout out on the podcast. That's the prize.
You know what? I'm ready right here now. I'm ready right now to double down and say if you win, you can be a guest on Diplomacy.
Yeah,
Cast.
Absolutely, Dave Maletsky.
I'll
come on down if you win.
That's how excited I am about
absolutely.
it.
Absolutely. Why would we not do that?
Because previously we were just going to do a shout-out. I just wanted to really just take it to the next level.
Yeah.
That's how excited we are about it now.
Yeah.
Okay. A few orders of business that I got to get through really quick here. I got to do this. I did finalize the scoring system, and I guess it needs some clarification. And I'm running this, and so darn it, this is how it works, and this is how it goes, and I just want to say it on a piece of...
This is on record.
Record, yeah, here. Okay. Your first through seventh place, if a person on your team places first through seventh place of the tournament, you will earn that many Grand Prix points. Whatever, however many Grand Prix points that their first through seventh was worth, that's how many points they get for it.
Okay?
Each reasonable. Best country is the same as a seventh place. What did we just say? Sixth place.
Sixth or seventh.
Each best country is the same as a sixth place. A best stab, if the tournament has a best stab, that's the same as a sixth place. Because a lot of tournaments have that trophy.
Right. And if they don't now, they will.
Yes. Especially if Dave Molesky is involved in the organizing of it.
Because apparently we're just going to standardize the awards at tournaments so that people can maximize their fantasy.
Well, it was the only one I could think of that, like, a lot of people have that one at their thing. Other than best country. Although I'd be willing in future years if there's, like, other awards that make sense to add, like, some bonus points for. Shooting the moon. This one has turned out to be a little bit controversial.
Yeah.
I think that I said that was worth the same as
seventh.
No, it was more. It was high. It was higher than
In the international shoot the moon.
Yeah, I think it was either a fourth or a third. I think it was a third. I think I said that the shoot the moon bonus was the same as a third place at the tournament bonus. The shoot the moon bonus will hereby be defined as you must play
all the rounds.
You must play a minimum of three rounds at the tournament. In every round that you do play, three or more, you must be completely eliminated in order to qualify for this bonus. Which means you could play three rounds, get eliminated in all three, and then sit out the fourth in a four-round tournament and still qualify for the Shoot the Moon. I think it would be poor sportsmanship, but you could do that. You could, and I mean, unless you're just miserable like I was by the end of that, thing, and you're just like, I don't even want to play anymore. Fine. You got to shoot the moon. If you play four rounds, only get eliminated in three of them and get even 1 point in the fourth one, you don't qualify for the shoot the moon. So if you're Dave Molesky and you're trying really hard to shoot the moon, I guess you did the right thing by just not playing the Sunday round so as not to endanger your shoot the moon bonus that you wanted so bad. So that's fine. That's fine. I mean, I'm not rooting for that to happen to anybody. I think it's kind of funny.
I'm going to be pretty excited when the winner of the of this thing is the biggest loser. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about that. That seems very apt to me.
Yes. Yes, you can draft yourself. Several people did, and not just Dave Molesky. A few people drafted themselves.
Sure, there's nothing wrong with
that. Nothing wrong with that. A lot of people thought you should change that rule because it's going to screw stuff up too bad, to which I said, aha, it's screwing stuff up. So that's interesting. But I would be willing to think about this in a few later years. Last order of business, Eddie Bersan, who skipped the draft and then decided he wanted a team later. You don't actually have a team, Eddie. I was drunk. I know you're not listening to this show. I was like, yeah, write down some people, because I figured, like, everybody, like, that anybody wanted to take would be gone, and so Eddie's team would just suck no matter what. So he wrote down a bunch of people that were... It's a long story. He wrote down a bunch of people that were already taken, and then eventually I was like, okay, that's your team, Eddie? And he was like, yeah, that's my team. I was like, all right. And then I went to bed and left the little pad, and he had changed it to some better people in the morning. So no, you don't have a team, Eddie, and you're not listening to this. So just when I'm like, haha, go back and listen to episode 27. You don't have a team, Eddie. Haha. This is important because the eventual winner of this tournament went undrafted.
Yep.
Dan Lester, chip on his shoulder, wanted to show them all what a big mistake he'd made, came out and won WAC, which could be actually the biggest tournament of the year and the highest point scoring thing. Dan Lester undrafted, including in Eddie's initial version of his team, which he then went back and changed. Okay.
That's so in future editions of this, we'll give you what the scores, the standings, so you can expect to hear where the Fantasy Diplomacy League
is. Yes. Yeah, y'all know how you did, basically. Maybe in a future edition, we might also go. We were talking about doing it for this show, but I don't think we have time at this point. In a future edition, we might also go through and look at some of the teams.
Yeah, it's just.
Oh! And before I forget, what I love about this hobby, completely independent of us, and I don't even know how it works. There was already by like 4 hours after we did the draft, there was already Meta Fantasy Diplomacy.
Oh yeah,
where some people had gone and like bet whose teams they thought were going to do better. So it wasn't just that you were playing the game for the reward of a shout out on the podcast or now coming onto the podcast to gloat about how you won Fantasy Diplomacy. No, there was already now other people who were like drafting each other's teams on how they do in the Fantasy Diplomacy. Yeah. And
it was
presumably betting money on it. I love you all. You're fantastic. All of you out there.
You sound great, by the way.
You sound super. Really good. The more I talk, the better I sound.
Yeah, all right. So now let's talk about, let's change out of this. And let's talk about...
Yeah, we're done. Anything else about WAC? Congratulations.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It was fun.
We're all going to miss it. I'm sorry we had to burn the building to the ground.
Yeah, you know, I was tired of that place.
Max Shields in particular.
He's a trooper.
Yeah. You made it extra amazing. Yeah.
He shined all those pennies. Counted all his buttons.
Mark Zoffel with your bridesmaid maid of honor like speech at the thing that was like super sincere and didn't make fun of anyone. He just got up there and he was just like, I just want to hug all of you for how special you've been and I just, this means so much.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Yes. Power plays.
Power plays.
Power plays.
Power plays.
Okay, yeah.
Woot.
We're going to stick with this alliances thing because people liked it. They told us.
Yes.
I don't know. People were in giving, forgiving, happy, cheerful moods at WAC.
Yeah, they're WAC. Well, they did seem to like it.
Plenty of free wine and that sort of thing probably cheers you up about our show. But no, we got a lot of positive feedback about like just breaking down a little alliance.
Yeah, really just kind of going through it. And this is, you know, we might not do this every episode, but we'll eventually get through... this is just something we're
every possible. Back. Yeah, when we talk about that England-Turkey alliance, boy.
Yeah,
that's going to be a really.
Let me say, we'll eventually get to a point where
yeah.
You know, we'll exhaust the things we want to say about these sort of binary alliances.
Yeah.
And so today we're going to talk about the RT. Some people, what is some
the juggernaut, the Russia Turkey, the steamroller. Yeah, I've seen steamroller.
Yeah.
The Schliftenstein. All right, I just made that one. It just sounds cool though. It sounds kind of tough.
Or. Really gross.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you're extracting something from someone.
The Bolivian motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I've heard it called.
I think that's a position.
Yeah, yeah. I've done that before.
Yeah, good. All right. Russia, Turkey.
Yeah.
So yeah. I guess the place to start here is.
Well, the why to do it.
Well, the why to do it and the... Yes, let's start with why to do it.
That's what we did the last time. We'll
stick with the formula.
Yeah, yeah. The why to... I mean... Well, you go first.
Well, I guess the easiest thing to say is it's fairly straightforward.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of the odd thing about this alliance.
It's kind of
almost a default.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It's kind of the, like... Why to do it? It's really good.
Yeah.
Do it any time you think you can get away
Anything
with it.
Anything else is more difficult.
Yeah. If you think that the guy is possibly somebody that you can work with, if you think that you can possibly make the board not freak out at the threat of a juggernaut, because that's the thing that happens on every freaking board, is anytime they see Russia and Turkey anywhere other than locked in mortal warfare, everybody tries to panic about it.
Right.
They're like, oh my god, it's the juggernaut, this is everybody except France. Yeah. France is the guy who's secretly over there, like, yes, perfect, juggernaut, outstanding.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
I'll meet you in the middle.
It's really funny when you are France and people are like, but there's a juggernaut over there, you have to do this or that. And you're like, really? I do?
Yeah, I'll be right on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me just sign me up for that.
But anyway, but everybody else on the board likes to try and panic about it.
Yeah, and a lot of times I say unnecessarily, because it's good, mm-hmm. but it's not the end-all be-all.
Mm-hmm.
It's only, when we're going to get to this, but the sort of like steamroller juggernaut aspect mm-hmm. to it, you know, that's really, they don't start rolling for many years, and even then, it's, if you're competent, it's, you can sort of shut that down.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, and I guess there's maybe one thing, like, I had a game at WAC that's making me think about it now, where, like, I felt like I was Austria and my Italian, and I felt like there was maybe a Russia Turkey brewing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were like, well, we have to react to this because this is bad for both of us if there's this Russia Turkey brewing. And so we cooked up all this zany crap that we did in 1901 to like make sure that we were in the optimal position to fend off this burgeoning Russia Turkey alliance, and realized about 2 years later, well, realized when we were talking about it after the game, like where we'd gone wrong, we were like, we probably shouldn't have done that because that made the Russia Turkey.
Right.
So Russia Turkey, sometimes the why you do it is you think that there's an Italy Austria that's freaking out and coming right at you.
And you're just sort of forced into it.
At that point, you're kind of forced into it. At least you're forced into it in the short term until like one of Russia or Turkey can maybe peel off and
right.
you know, like maybe the Russia can stab the Turkey and just turn it into an anti-Turkey thing or something. But sometimes that's the why, is because there's an Austria, Italy, and
yeah, you don't have a choice.
You don't have a choice.
I think it's of the most likely candidates that you have.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the more natural pairing.
Yeah. And most of the time, it's because you think you can.
Right. Unlike, say, the EF we were talking about before, it's a little bit less...
It's a little more board sensitive.
Right.
The EF, it's a little more like, right. oh, well, if there's a Russia that's anti-German, and if there's
yeah,
a
there's
this,
just a lot
there's
of other factors. And, this, and I think that RT is, and that's why I think, you know, when you guys are playing, you're finding yourselves gravitating towards it. It's just,
it's a great alliance.
It's a great alliance. It works. There's some distance. And,
do we want to spend 30 seconds or a minute and talk about, like, just what's so good about it?
Sure.
I mean... you know, there's the obvious sort of north-south split that you can do. Turkey can be the fleet guy for the most part. Russia can be the army guy for the most part. You can, you know, if you can make peace in the Black Sea, it's just a really efficient use of pieces. The one awkward spot is the Black Sea. If you guys can figure out something to do about that, whether it's sail that Russian fleet and through and just lend it to the Turk, or blow it up and replace it with another army, or whatever you want to do, it's just, there's a lot of natural flow. You've both got your back to the wall. You've both got, Russia's got the one neighbor to the south, Turkey's got the one neighbor to the north, and if those two aren't worrying about each other, there's like basically just one direction to go. Russia's already over the line, so he's always got somewhere to keep going. So there's just a lot of built-in potential in the alliance, and that's why people like it, that's why it's called the Juggernaut, because once it gets going...
Yeah, man. Like I was saying earlier, like it can get to a point where it's just rolling, but you, mm-hmm. you know, you can shut it down.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Like the board can panic and shut it down, but that's the reason why it has sort of a special place on the board where other powers will be like, there's a juggernaut. Whatever I was planning on doing, I should probably not do that and deal with the fact that there's a juggernaut.
There's not as there's nowhere else in the board where there's such a natural and easy separation of mm-hmm. force and.
Mm-hmm. They can help each other.
Yeah,
they can be fighting a couple of different people at the same time without it hurting them too bad.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway.
So now that we sold you on this, thing you were going to do anyway.
Yeah.
There's a time and a place to do it. There will be situations that you need to look at the board and go, well, this is not a good time to do an RT.
Oh, okay.
Because I would, you know, the premise that we're putting forth here is you almost always want to start with the RT.
Mm-hmm.
There will be times when you don't want to.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
You don't want to do it when there is, well, if you can't figure it out in 01 it's best to just play it cautiously and say, okay, allow the other person, either Rush or Trisha, sure, to, you know, do whatever they need to do. When you're reacting to them, you don't do it in such a way where you forestall the option of doing an RT.
But the old, should we bounce in the black seat?
Exactly. That's what I'm kind of heading. Yeah. Or things along that line. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm gonna put this here. I'm gonna bounce in Armenia or some stupid.
You don't have to decide pre-spring 01 that we're doing the RT here. In fact, in the East in particular, there's like a lot of times there's the thing where everybody just bounces everybody everywhere important, and then you decide in the fall.
Right.
Like everybody does what they're supposed to. Nobody does anything at all aggressive. And then you just decide in the fall.
Yep.
And those are fine, and those don't forestall an RT. They could just as well be setting up an RT. But I'd say maybe if you get the feeling that there really is a friendly Austria Italy that's going to happen, if you're Turkey, you just kind of puke a little bit and go, oh, well, that's not good for me. If you're Russia, though, you do have the option to say, oh, well, I'll just hop on board.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just go kill Turkey early. If you're Turkey, it's not so easy to say, I'll just hop on board with an Austria, Italy that's already friendly, because they're almost certainly targeting you at least a little bit.
Yeah. And you're just going to get boxed in.
Yeah.
And that's your whole deal. Turkey just needs to get out.
If you're Turkey, if you really want to work with Austria, work with Austria, but make sure that Italy is doing something else.
Yeah.
At the time, Turkey Austria will be another one for another day, and it'll be fun to talk about.
That's an interesting one. You were hinting at this earlier. You don't want to solidify that AI, because there's really the thing that you. It is better, and Eric may disagree with it. Disagree with me here. It is better to have a slow, perhaps even dangerously mediocre game where you're progressing and doing things than being locked in an RT looking at an AI and doing nothing while the West develops and gets momentum. It is a terrible feeling to just look helplessly on as the other side of the board gets their just everything together, mm-hmm, and you get nowhere. I've been there so many times, and it is a terrible feeling.
I probably don't disagree with you, but when I play, I find myself in that situation way too darn often. I'm not saying I play good. I'm just saying, like, I feel like I'm not. I end up in these 2-on-2s, whether I'm on the Russia-Turkey side or the Italy-Austria side. Obviously, if you want to do a Russia-Turkey, excuse me, if you can get Italy on board, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if maybe Italy even institutes the conversation, even is the one who's like, I want to kill Austria. At that point, Austria's probably just going to die. It's depressing if you have the game where Italy's like, I'm going to kill Austria, and then one of Russia or Turkey attacks each other, because what a wasted opportunity, right?
Not if you're Italy.
I suppose not. I suppose that's gold for Italy, but it's depressing. It's depressing if you're either Russia or Turkey. You're like, really? We could just be doing, like, this is the thing that you hope for when you're a juggernaut. You hope that the Italian is anti-Austrian, and then you can just, like, crush the Austrian and then have the Italian for dessert, right?
Yeah.
That's what you want to happen.
Well, this is good to talk about, because it's a nice segue into some of the things that you're trying to set up on the board as, mm-hmm, as an RT.
Yeah. So your first order of business, right, is to get Italy on board if it can.
Well, yes, but I just want to identify two paths that we're going to go down here. One is and we'll talk about this in a second, like RT formations that are very overt, obvious, and straight out of the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And then ones that are a little bit, and I think both Eric and I prefer these, that are a little bit more subtle, a little bit...
Depends on the board.
Depends on the board, but a little bit not solidifying so quickly in 01.
Yep.
Because that allows for what Eric was alluding to, which is the Italian or the Austrian to fight each other, maybe, mm-hmm, the French come in, maybe the Germans drop down, all sorts of crazy stuff can, mm-hmm, happen. But none of those things are going to happen with certain players if your tea is forming in 01.
If you scare the board early. Yeah, exactly. So the scare the board early moves, I guess. Yeah. We should maybe just start there really fast. So that's the one where nobody tries to go to the Black Sea.
Yeah,
that's basically the... There's different variants on it, but nobody goes to the Black Sea.
So the Black Sea remains open. That, you might as well... Well, that's not the worst of these, but it is pretty obvious to the rest of the board that there's super friendly stuff going on.
Yeah.
Unless... So know that.
And that can work on sort of multiple levels, too. That can be like, well, they wouldn't be that obvious unless one of them was up to... You know, like, he's thinking, I'm thinking, he's thinking type stuff. But the moves themselves obviously imply that you've agreed on this in advance, because you wouldn't just not go to the Black Sea without ever having a conversation about it with the other person, right?
Right. So... some other things that are fun, and I enjoy doing this particular one, but it's pretty obvious what's going on. Allowing the Russian into the Black Sea, allowing the Turk to go to the Black Sea, dropping the Russian fleet down to Ankara to blow it up. Armenia,
yeah,
to blow it up.
It's fun. Yeah, it's not any, like, most people know about the thing where you blow up the Russian fleet, and also so like, it's no less of a broadcast unless you're playing against new players who don't actually know what it is, and also you're spending a lot of moves just in the achievement of that goal. I mean, and don't get me wrong, it actually is nice for the Russian to be able to do an extra army build or northern fleet build.
It can work really, really well.
It can be amazing. The concept swap is the thing that we're talking... No, I'm sorry, I don't know if it has a name. Thing where you blow up the Russian
Southern Army. I don't think it has a name.
I'm sure you can look it up.
Destroying the Sevastopol fleet in Armenia.
Concept swap is another such thing that, like, again, it's kind of a gambit, like, where the Russian gets to eventually move his fleet out. He goes to the Black Sea, then he takes Khan. Meanwhile, the Turk takes... Sevastopol with an army, and then permanently then thereafter, as long as they're great care bearers, then the Russian can never build the Southern fleet, and therefore could never stab the Turk, and the Turk could never stab the Russian. And anyway,
the nice thing about that is that particular approach has a lot of momentum to it. I mean, you know, it's just moving the Russian fleet, you know, stab to black
that's
on, you know.
And the Turk sort of has an extra army under those circumstances.
Yes.
So if he walks around and takes them, that's...
Tank to arm.
Whatever, they can still stab each other in O2 if they go through all of the trouble of doing that.
But it's a nice kind of different thing to do. You don't see the concept swap that often.
No.
You see the other two a little bit more.
Yep.
But all of those three, in the south at least, are pretty much saying... You guys have decided in O1 to do an RT. And it's probably going to form an AI.
Yeah. Unless A and I don't know what they need to do under those circumstances. So that's the thing, is like,
you gotta balance.
Start with the easy one. Nobody goes to the Black Sea, right? Hey, have I just announced to the entire board that we want to work together? Or is this look, they're playing nicey nice for now?
Yeah.
Or is this I didn't even notice that nobody moved to the Black Sea? You know, like what's your level of competition in those other two countries?
Yeah, and I mean, it's a little bit... If Russia, and I'm not recommending this, just, you know, puts its army in Romania instead of the Black Sea, that might be...
Wait, his fleet, you mean?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That might be a little bit... There's a little bit of temperance there. Like,
so
maybe the board's going to read that like, okay... Maybe the Russian is not...
There is a legitimate case that you could make if you're the Russian. If you move your fleet to Romania instead of the Black Sea in 1901, it's still basically only aimed at Turkey. Where's it going to go from Romania?
Yeah, nowhere
else. Bulgaria, right?
Yeah. Well, the other half of it is, like, Turkey needs to do something with his fleet that...
Sure. Well, so for the Turk, it's a little different, because the Turk would actually prefer, because he's got that fleet stuffed back in there in Ankara.
Yeah, exactly.
And if he's just spending all his time just bouncing in the Black Sea, or, like, you know, unless he actually wants to attack the Russian, that fleet actually isn't very much good to him. He'd rather get that thing out and sailing.
At least to go to Khan.
But of course, right. But of course, it's a disaster if the Russian takes the Black Sea in spring of 1901. And so you kind of got to be sure.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, anytime I'm Turkey, I'd rather have that fleet out to the Med instead of to hanging out in Ankara doing basically nothing. But
you gotta just what's gonna happen to the rest of the board. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the important lesson about the RT.
Yeah.
Because it's so tempting to just do it.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's so easy, so natural to just do it. And I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, players often find themselves in that 2-on-2 standoff.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's easy and you want to do it, you want to get going, you want to be efficient. I think that a lot of times when you're playing against competent players, you're going to end up in that 2-on-2 standoff.
Yeah, definitely.
And the people that benefit are the West. Because mm-hmm. it's not AI. They don't benefit at all.
No, they usually get like very, very slowly ground down unless they make amazing guesses, in which case maybe they win. But win the 2-on-2, which basically means like, oh, I grew one.
Yeah.
Every, you know, our whole alliance grew one every year. And by the time it matters,
if that standoff lasts any longer than a year, there's no winner in the East anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just, you're never going to get it turned around. It's either going to be a big draw.
Yeah, 2-on-2 sucks. I mean...
So you want to really, really avoid that. It's hard to pull out of it once you get there.
I will always make the case, if I'm, say, Austria, that an Italian is a fool to ever jump on board with a juggernaut, because he will always be dessert in that.
Sure.
It that's not actually necessarily the case. The right Italian might really know that he's got the longer-term plan, and all right, we're just going to all get Austria there, and then I think I can work with the Russian long-term. I think we can stab the Turk next, you know. So it's not like the Italian should never do that. It's just like, thinking of it from the RT perspective, if you make your plan, and your plan is, first we kill Austria, we get Italy to help, then we kill Italy, and that's really what you want to do, you can probably do it.
Yeah.
Unless the Italian is really clever, basically.
Yes, basically you can kind of do that. I just wanted, just so that we stay on focus.
Yeah.
Or at least in my head, I'm knowing where we're going.
That's good. That makes one of our heads.
So we've gotten through, some obvious things to do the RT. Mm-hmm. Our general recommendation: you read the board, decide whether or not. You can get away with it. Because obviously it's optimal.
Yeah.
But probably you're going to be in the camp of, you know, I'll just say the slow develop.
And it's not actually bad. Bounce in the Black Sea, then nobody panics.
Yeah.
Nobody has anything to talk about in the spring of 01. Oh, they bounced in the Black Sea. Yep, all right, okay. Fine.
Great.
And then you do it in the fall 01. You do it in the spring 02. You do it, like, whenever. It doesn't actually hurt that much. Like, the Alliance is so ridiculously robust that by the time they figure out there's a juggernaut, like, even if you haven't done anything all that tricky, except just sort of done standard moves without actually attacking each other, the next thing you know, we just took Serbia and Budapest. Like, hey, there you go. Like,
whoops.
Yeah.
Just don't do anything dumb just go full bore.
Yeah.
When you don't have to. Like, you should be absolutely playing all sides. Like, here's another pro tip. Mm. Don't spend a lot of time talking to the Russian or the Turk, depending on whichever one your neighbor is.
Yeah.
Spend almost no time talking to those people.
Yeah.
Because you don't need to.
If you're Russia, you probably want to talk to some people up north. Go ahead. Focus on that. Just be like, Turkey, we cool?
Yeah.
All right.
Definitely cool. Just minimize the amount of time you talk to the Turk.
Russian. It's one of those things where, like, if you're doing it, if it's just like, oh, this is my favorite other person in diplomacy and I totally want to do this alliance and it's an awesome alliance, if you're doing it, you can just be like, we doing this? Okay.
Yeah.
I'll call you next year.
Right. So, I mean, because every season that you have that much more momentum on this, it's just incrementally, exponentially better.
Yeah. Gets harder and harder for Austria and Italy to, like, do anything about it.
Right, and you just need to take one big bite out of Austria, and that's done.
Mm-hmm.
You Greece, Serbia,
yep.
Boom. That's about it. It's always going to be a tougher nut to crack, and then...
Right.
And you can go on
to that. Turkey takes just Bulgaria in 1901, very common. Builds just Fleet Smyrna, 1901. Actually, pretty common, too.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, you still haven't freaked anybody out if you're doing it right. Like, you can actually get away with that. All right.
So here you are.
Yeah.
You're doing more of a slow game.
Mm-hmm.
Your focus is almost entirely on the south. Do we have any? What should the Russian be doing in the north with this? And how far? How much?
So that
should they be?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a balancing act because, of course, as the Turk, you want the Russian engaged pretty much up north, like, because where's your growing path as the Turk? Like, you're going to get Mediterranean things, Italian things, that kind of thing, but they're not as close and not as easy to get, and you don't want the Russian to get too much bigger than you,
yeah,
obviously, or he's just going to stab you and you've created a Russian win or a Russian, like, really good result and bad result for you. So you do want him doing pretty, like, focused up north, like, taking not actually that much of Austria, but a lot of, like, Germany and Scandinavia, and that way your guys are well separated, well divided,
yeah,
not in each other's business very far. But you don't want him to go too far, because he can. You know, like, if a Russian gets a good Turkish ally, you can just be like, okay, we're working together. Okay, cool. We took this Italian center. We took this Austrian center. We took that. Holy crap, Russia's at 12.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm at 8, 9, you know, something like that. Like, he can outpace you in one of these. As the Russian, well,
no,
I guess.
It's really not a downside for
Yeah,
him.
I guess you kind of just outpace the Turk. But if you want to be a good ally, I suppose you can be taking things in the north
while feeding
things to the Turk in the south.
You know, yes, in the Russian situation, you want to be looking at the potential alternatives that Turkey is going to have.
Mm-hmm.
So the bigger the gap you make between the two of you, it might be great for you in the short term, but you're giving them a reason to flip.
True.
So, honestly, you can ride this out to a two-way, which means you can get pretty close to
that's
solo.
The other thing.
And honestly, you go for the two-way every time, and then...
And then if it turns out to be one of those 18-16 two-ways, then, well...
Which are my favorite kind of two-ways.
Yeah,
but,
yeah,
I mean, you might as well try and get to that point. You don't want to derail it, mm-hmm, you know, halfway through the mid-game, because you've gotten so much bigger than the Turk that the Turk panics.
Right, that's true. And it's not like the Turk could never have a good stab on the Russian.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
they
certainly
will.
Could, but it's just sort of like more situation, more tactical if you just, you know, like, I guess maybe the different thing that can happen is that the like, England-Germany could organize a really strong northern resistance,
yeah,
and they're like, oh, crap, juggernaut, that's bad for both of us.
Yeah.
Time to organize a thing here, and if they do that, that's way more anti-Russian than it is anti-Turkish.
Absolutely.
And so that's the advantage the Turk has in that situation, is that, like, he's like, oh, yeah, look at that, that's too bad about all your enemies out there. No, I'm fine.
There seems to be a lot of dots down here.
Yeah, I'm just cruising along, no problem,
sorry,
just doing my thing, and then...
Oh, here, have a bone. Did you see Vienna or something? That's fine.
Cool. Exactly. So it can go the other way, too. I feel like there's just, like, more kind of volatility in the Russian position in one of these. Like, Russia can be, like, way huge or way fall apart. Like, whereas the Turkish progression in a long-term juggernaut is sort of a more steady, like, a dot a year kind of thing for a while before something happens.
So I think that's our general advice in a lot of ways is stick with the RT. Once it gets going...
Mm-hmm.
Stick with it,
because
you end up doing better, both of you, as you continue to go along.
Yeah.
I think our other takeaway here is, as long as possible, hide this juggernaut,
mm-hmm,
put together mock battles if you need to.
Yeah, and that happens. That
just,
really does.
Just do whatever you need to do to avoid the concept on the board that you guys are in lockstep.
Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, you're awesome diplomats and you have everybody, like, worried about each other and not caring and too busy, but
you
do have to spend some extra effort, like, sowing confusion and sowing misery and just being like, what are you worried about a juggernaut for?
Yes.
Because, you know, because they're worried by default. People know. Everybody's been rolled over by an RT.
Yes.
Everybody who's ever played this game has been rolled over by an RT.
It'll happen. And you just do. You want to avoid as much as possible what I said earlier. Like, you can stop these things. You can stop these things pretty well developed.
Yeah.
And it'll end up shutting down a game because so many people, as Erica said, have been ruled over by one that they would rather just survive and end the game. It's that powerful.
Yeah, and it's sort of outside the scope of like what we're doing right now to like talk about like everything that can happen to organize against it. But just suffice it to say that like everybody will react. Everybody but France will react.
And
to
depending
this thing.
On how developed it is, I mean, France might even throw in a couple of fleets.
Sure,
just to get them close to Italy.
You know, France is the ultimate dessert. If you really are going for the two way, like France is like, oh no, it's great. You're attacking all my enemies.
yeah.
I'm the only one left, and I'm at 7, and you guys have all the rest. I've had that game, like where you're just like. Ah, it's cool. Thanks for attacking. Oh, thanks for taking out all my allies. Thanks for taking out all their dots.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Now I got no friends. And yeah, and that can happen. But point being, you did touch on it briefly. It is important to mention that the possible shelf life of an RT really is all the way to 1717 if you want to. You can look up on the website, you can look up like reasonable stalemate lines that you could make with an RT. If you really wanted to do 1717.
Right. And what Eric is alluding to is safely. You could do it in a way where they really couldn't stab you.
Yeah. And that's not true of, say, England, France.
Right.
England, France has a shelf life. Austria, Turkey has a shelf life. There's like no possible reasonable stalemate without like, okay, you get all my home centers, but I get all your whatever you took of it. Like like anything that anyone would ever do type two ways where you could do that. And it feels that way. Like if you play one out to the mid game, to the end game, you'll just be like, God, yeah, I really, there's always somebody else I want to attack here. I actually never want to attack you, right. My ally. There's always
so much growth potential.
There's always somewhere to go. Turkey just goes in the south, and Russia just goes in the north. And like when Russia gets bored with Germany, he goes after England. And when when he gets bored with England, he goes for Brest. And it's natural. And so as long as you can keep doing one, if you've got a good ally and you're getting along with them, do it. Obviously. It's no different than any other alliance. Look out for that one turn where one guy grows and the other guy doesn't. Watch your home dots because they're still pretty freaking close.
Yeah. So, I don't know. That's the RT. It's an interesting one for us to do because, there's not a lot of finesse to it.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of us for us to really strategize with you.
So basically, why did we even pick this?
No, because I think there's important things to know about the timing, the mid game, when not to do it.
Yeah,
know when to stop, and know that. I don't think everyone really understands shelf life with the RT. Like, I think that's something.
Well, so the shelf life is potentially amazing.
It's one of the only alliances that can do that.
Mm-hmm. But I guess the other takeaway is just know that when you're doing this, everybody else is hyper aware of it because everybody else knows how good it is. Or if they don't, they figure it out pretty fast.
Or they're told instantly.
Or they're told right by the one guy who's ever played on the board and knows anything about it. So you the diplomacy of it, it's like it's a bludgeon. Tactically. And so the diplomacy of it is generally just cheering everybody else up about the fact that they're being rocked by a juggernaut and like,
or hiding that bludgeon for as long as possible.
Right.
Oh, it's not really, look over here, guys. Look over
it's
here.
It's so easy to do tactically compared to other alliances that you really can, like Nathan said, like you really can work in like a fake war here and there.
Oh, yeah.
Or like, oh no, I'm working with this guy now. And then you were never working. But like you can kill a whole year just like screwing around and making it look not so bad.
Right. While subtly positioning yourself in the place where you can move the next year well.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, you have to, if this is one of those places where you're almost forced to make these kind of bizarre fake wars and distractions.
Yeah. The trickiness of it isn't the trickiness of like being underdogs trying to do something difficult and trick everybody into like falling for all your ploys. Yeah. The trickiness is the like being the overdog and not having everybody react to it that way.
All right.
We've made the point three different ways, but that's it. That's it. All I got that's on good. That one.
That's good.
Another episode, man.
Yeah.
In the books. 27?
27.
It's a good year.
I can't wait for our next bottle because it's going to be like a 28, I think.
Yeah. The episode 28 bottle of $6 wine. It'll be magnificent. Thanks for listening. Talk to you guys soon.
You have been listening to Diplomacy Cast. Thanks everyone for joining us.
Wasn't it fun?
It was great.
I had a great time.
Yeah, definitely. For Nathan Barnes, I'm Eric Mead. Signing off. We'll talk to you next time.
For Eric Mead, I am a giant 13-foot tall chocolate banana.
I was just trying to sound like a radio guy. That's what I get. Bye everyone.